if I was a real birder, I think I would maybe be able to ID that sound.
You don't? No?
No. I mean, is that the waxwing?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there was a lot less going on than I thought. Don't they make more noise sometimes? Or is that their max volume?
They do.
Okay.
No, they do. This one was a group of, I think, about 30 in Grand Marais. But depending, you know, with any bird, depending on what they're up to and how many of them, they can make more or less.
So, Malachi,
yes,
this
Bohemian waxwings.
This is a Season Watch pod where we actually know where the sound came from. Did you hear Charlie there?
That's
like,
impressive.
Knew where it was coming from. Amazing.
Wow. And not, yeah, just off the top of your head, you're able to ID the wind and everything. This is Grand Marais.
Oh, yeah, just by ear. No, definitely didn't pull it off of iNaturalist today.
Charlie, we've been talking about when are you a birder? When is someone a birder? Because I went on a Christmas bird count, and I like to look at birds, mm-hmm. but I very strongly put forward that I am not a birder.
But this is the Season Watch Pod. That's Malachi Coons. He's sitting in with us this week. We've got Charlie Mitchell. I'm Heidi Holton. Now we need the question answered, Charlie.
Thanks for keeping us on track.
You bet.
Right? Someone needs to. Ooh, that is... See, now I feel like a birder should answer that question, and I also don't feel like I am... Good
oh, if you're not a birder, what is the world? I mean,
I assumed you were a birder.
You're not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's what it probably is that anyone who's interested in birds and like makes the effort to go out and do a Christmas bird count is enough of a birder to call themselves a birder.
Right.
Yep.
But then there's
Fair
always
point.
The imposter syndrome.
Yeah. But Latimer, too, doesn't think of himself as a birder.
Mm-hmm. Is there a negative connotation that we're all trying to avoid, or why are we all so? I know that.
No, I think it's we're trying not to claim false glory, you know?
Yes. Okay. For me, I would say the people who really got me into birding are much more of a birder than me. So I think I've always felt like I am not at their level. Like they spend any free time going birding. If there's a rare bird around, they're dropping everything to go look for it. They know all the songs. They do a lot of things that I don't do, and so that was my introduction to birding. So that's like I have a standard for what is a birder, and I don't believe that I'm there.
What if we had the standard be like, I can tell you two birds.
A test.
And that's it. You know, I can tell you that's a robin, and that's a loon. I'm a birder.
Oh, I don't.
Counts for me.
I was about to say no.
Not for Malachi. I think.
I think if you have interest... Like, even if you don't know species necessarily, I don't know. I'm sure the birders will weigh in.
Yeah. I think Malachi, though, is a birder because he's gone on two Christmas bird counts.
Yes.
That counts for me.
Yeah.
I like to be outside. I like to...
How was it this year?
I had a blast. Yeah. It was frigid. I was told that it was only the third coldest that the crew that I went on had ever been on.
But I was on the second coldest.
So Heidi has got real clout. But for me, this was my coldest bird count. But I do like to be outside on some frigid days. It was negative 25 when we started and probably for the first little batch. We did a lot of car birding, I will say, you know, that we probably leaned a little more into that because of the cold temperatures. But what we started off with today, which I wasn't able to ID, is Bohemian waxwings. And I love waxwings, and so seeing that was, I would say, like top highlight of the experience. But just being outside with people who are interested in nature and birds, and you can't go wrong.
The cool thing is you had a photographer there with you, Lori Schall, and there's a gallery that will be available at our website, kexc.org. Tell us about the crew that was out.
It was, so myself with John Latimer, phenologist, everyone knows him, loves him. I should say when he's there, you learn about other things. You're doing a Christmas bird count, but I have trouble with green coniferous trees. So I think that I can see John tense up a little bit when I mislabel one. That's a different thing. Aaron Brown was also there as well, who I bet would also, just from the way he talks about it, say that he is not a birder. Everyone's like, my birding slowly goes up throughout my life, but I don't think it was. And then we had Lori Schall, our wonderful photographer there, getting photos of us, telling us to act normal, which is impossible. When a photographer tells you to act normal, you know you've already screwed it up when they start saying that, and there's no way to get out. It was a lot of fun. We have, you divide an area into quadrants, so We were a little bit north of Grand Rapids. It's kind of funny. Like, you, the roads don't exactly follow these quadrants, so you briefly have to drive out, and then you drive back in, and, you know, the joke is, all right, no one look. Like, we don't want to see a bird over here. We can't count it as ours. So everybody close your eyes, and we'll just drive around. But, yeah, super fun. I love it. I think people should get out. Usually, at least for me, it's not that hard to find people who are already going to them and who will take you under their wing, so to speak.
Ayo.
I didn't come with any other bird puns, but, you know, there's a lot of people who, birders want other people to bird, I've found.
Yeah, it's a very, I think, inviting hobby. I still haven't been to a Christmas bird count.
Oh, what?
I'm ashamed to say.
Wow.
But
my only gripe with the Christmas bird count, Charlie, you gotta get out there, is that
I know
Christmas is kind of a specific day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So
mislabeled.
It is. It's pretty mislabeled. I mean, it's not like there are many other like holiday season, winter, all these words you could use, but they call it a Christmas bird count, and then it happens definitely not on Christmas. It's a little strange.
Yikes. You were out the 14th. The ones in my area are all on the like 20th, 21st.
In fact, I looked at the entire list in the map. There are none on Christmas.
People have got other. But here we go. The real birders would still be out birding.
Yeah.
It's eight.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, son. I got to go. No? All right.
For those who don't know, you're looking for birds. What's happening then? Someone's in charge of writing it down? How many species?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to keep track of total amounts, too. That part, most of the time, it's just anywhere from one to a few. But for certain birds, you kind of end up with just like chickadees, right? You've at the end, you just have many, many, many marks that you've put down. So for those ones, and sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot too. Like they're all flitting around and there's many of them. A tree full of Bohemian waxwings, you know, you try your best. And we got to right around 20, I believe, was in our flock, non-Grand Marais birds.
Nice.
I don't even remember them making much noise though. Let's see, what else is happening? Most people besides the driver, and maybe sometimes the driver, are looking away from the road. You're driving very slowly if you are car birding. Otherwise, you're walking around. And then I guess you kind of make a rough plan before you go out. So for us, to get waterfowl, you need open water, essentially. There wasn't any open water, and we didn't get any waterfowl. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the rest of the people who are out counting the different sections or quadrants of the Grand Rapids area. But so you make a little plan. You know, we're going to start over here. This is a good place to get waterfowl. We're going to go over here. Luckily, John Latimer, rural mail carrier. Aaron Brown
knows
and I
all the spots.
He does know all the spots. Aaron Brown and I were kind of joking that like our route is sort of on John's faint memories of where bird feeders are. And we kind of we structured this whole journey around the area of like this place. And we noticed that a lot of people have bird feeders. Barely any are actually filled, which is sort of like performative bird supporting in a way.
Yep. I say as I look out at my empty bird feeder right now.
Sorry.
oh, you're fine. The birds are well known to like not rely on bird feeders except during times of extreme cold, but still. It's such a bummer to see a bird feeder when it's not filled. I know what I'll be doing right after this.
Sorry, guilt tripped you. Most of the birds we saw were at bird feeders, so if I can say. Mm-hmm. But like you said, the cold days especially show maybe that's where they head to, so that was our best luck.
I have a hunch if you're out on a positive 25 degree day, the number of birds at feeders might be a little different than on a negative 25 degree day. Some days you just want the easy calories.
So the time that I went in the second coldest of John's Christmas bird count days, the water was open at the Prairie Dam. So we've had cold earlier this year. It kind of tells us like the changing seasons and temperature, because that was really... That was very cool to go see swans there. That was part of our count. So.
I bet there's some amount of strategy in terms of which quadrant you choose and the habitats available in terms of how many species you might be able to get. Ooh, I wonder if there's any drama between who gets the good quadrant.
Wow. You know, again, the real birders might be more involved in this. That's a good point, though. You know, I bet if you have the river section stays open longer. I also, just from personal experience, I know like waxwings, I don't see them outside of the city as much. There's a lot of like fruit trees in Grand Rapids where you can see them pretty often. So I bet there is one. Luckily, this one is all just about collecting data, because I have done some other bird counts in the winter. Not, I haven't done just two, but they weren't Christmas.
Oh, how is he not a birder?
Yeah.
They weren't Christmas bird counts. I'll just throw that out there. They were just winter bird counts.
They were just random bird counts that you go on for fun?
Yes.
Non-birder?
Nope. And they were...
Sure, yeah. You're definitely more of a birder than I am.
Okay, so one time, the people that were getting me into birds, I was just sort of like thinking about it. And I was walking by Lake Superior, saw a little grayish tiny bird, you know, whatever. I'm thinking about it. I'm looking at my phone, looking at my book. I'm doing all these things. Can't figure it out. And I don't know what I decided. I think I eventually was like, I think this is a blue-gray gnatcatcher. Okay, so tell my friend. And it becomes a joke among all these real birders. Apparently that bird never goes this far north. You wouldn't see it. And so one day I showed up and they were all hanging out. And that was like what I was known as. Like, oh, that's the guy who thought he saw a blue-gray gnatcatcher.
Oh.
So that's, I'm carrying baggage is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're carrying baggage, yep.
They were
well,
birders.
Well, maybe you
they
saw.
They were real birders.
I like to think that you just happened to see one of those like weird long distance migrants. Like there was that gray cheeked rosy finch. Like
me
remembering compound words. that like lives in Colorado that showed up in Minnesota last year. All the birders were a Twitter about it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna take a listen to John Latimer this week. He happened to talk a little bit about some birds here.
This did not come on our bird count. We didn't see any. We did not see any. There were probably some that were seen, but I have starlings at my bird feeder, and these starlings they're introduced. The first starlings probably were brought to the United States around the time of the Civil War, about I think 1870 or thereabouts, 1872, somewhere in there, the first starlings were being brought over from Europe because they were a very popular bird in Europe. They're very aggressive birds. They nest in cavities. They nest earlier than a lot of cavity nesters, so they can take over a lot of houses that would normally fall to birds that would be more desirable. The fact that they are introduced means that they are not protected. All of the birds of the United States are protected. There is a law that says you may not shoot them, you can't harvest them, eat them, unless they're a game bird, and then there's a season. But in the case of songbirds, you can't go out and just willy-nilly shoot them. It's you're in violation of the law. Not so for the starling. The starling is introduced, and so if you want to trap one, for example, and raise it in your house, perfectly legal. If you want to trap a cardinal and raise it in your house, perfectly illegal. So if it's native to the United States, you cannot capture it, kill it, maintain it as a pet. You just can't do that. But with the starling, you're welcome to. Starlings, what do they look like? Well, they have a short tail. They have long triangular wings. They are oftentimes in the summertime, they are the birds that travel in these big flocks where they move together almost in a uniform way. That is, one bird turns and all the birds turn. So you'll oftentimes see movies of the starlings flying like that. They're quite adept at flying, and that flocking behavior makes it hard for predators to pick out that one bird that they're going to attack. They come whipping into a flock like that, and the starlings just kind of scatter as a group, and the hawk is like, whoa, well, I thought I was going to grab that one, but oh, wait, there's one over there. And then by the time they figure it all out, it's too late. This time of year, the beak should be dark. The ones at my house are still kind of yellow, left over from the summer. In the springtime, the beak will turn yellow, quite spotted with white right now as their feathers wear down. They'll go through a molt and they will come back in the spring looking almost iridescent, quite brown, dark brown. But if you look at the head, neck area, they're going to be kind of iridescent. The beak is fairly long, and in the summertime, the only way you can tell a male from a female is to look at the beak and look at the base of the beak And on the males, the base of the beak is kind of a blue or blue-gray. And on the female, the beak will be yellow all the way from the tip to the base. So anyway, starlings are out there, and I have a few at my house. You may have one or two at your house as well.
Wow.
I love that guy.
That did not go in the direction that I thought I was going to go. There was a brief interlude there where next time anyone comes to my house in a year or two, it's just going to be full of starlings. My
just
pets.
So many starlings.
I can't kill them. I can't do that. But you can make them as pets as well now, I know. So, or you can keep them as pets.
They are great mimics. They'll talk to you. You can like teach them to make little Star Wars noises. It's a great YouTube sometimes, like starling talking. A listener called in about the starlings and left us a voicemail.
Hi, John's talking about starlings, and there's an interesting term called a, and I'm sure he knows it, but it's good for the, it's interesting, it's a murmuration of starlings when they like that, in a big flock going the same direction all the time, turning. A murmuration.
It is a great word, murmuration. So, you know how sometimes I get curious and I go off on these random, like, deep dives onto the internet for no reason? That sure enough happened again this week. John was talking about starlings and how they were released in, like, the late 1800s. And there's this story that goes around about starlings that the reason they were released was there was this ornithologist in New York who wanted to release all of the birds that Shakespeare mentioned in North America. If you Google it, you'll see this repeated over and over. But like, we have a lot of kind of tall tales like that. So I went and dug a little bit deeper, found a New York Times article where they dug into it and found that there was this guy. He didn't necessarily care about Shakespeare. That was kind of invented after the fact. But he did release these like two bunches of starlings in 1890 and 1891. In that article, this is, you know, curiosity hydra, they mentioned that these murmurations of starlings, you know, are these really tightly packed groups of starlings that are all like bunches of birds per square feet. And when they get sucked into an airplane engine, have been known to bring the airplane down. So they're a huge problem for airports. And a flock of starlings brought down an airplane, which started this group of scientists that investigate new vocabulary word, snarge, S-N-A-R-G-E. So whenever bird strike happens to an airplane, the people at the airport gather whatever is left of the bird, which is called snarge, might be bits of feather, it might be whatever gross thing, and they send it to this lab to figure out what species caused it so that they can, like, make these airports safer. And it doesn't have to be bird. If some other, you know, a bat or something, it's all called snarge.
Oh, now there's a band name.
Snarge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say it was, like, the verb, like, they got snarged by
they
a bird.
They got snarged. Well, it should be.
I think we could do that. I think we can fully
use that, like Sully, that one. Didn't a goose get that one guy who landed in the Hudson or a geese or something?
Mm-hmm.
That bird, flock of geese. They got snarged.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I am fully on board with this. If it's not a word already, we're making it one.
Wow.
So, it's a noun and a verb now.
So there's a possibility in the world that I could be at a cocktail party and meet someone, and I said, what do you do for a living? And they might say, I study snarge. Wow.
Yeah, I guess there's a possibility. And you would know what they do right away.
Yeah, I think you guys were thinking I was going to stop at cocktail party. Is there a possibility that I would
There's a possibility that I would go.
Someone might invite you someday.
Hopefully.
It's probably because we're always talking about snarge. They don't bring us back, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my. We get into words, of course, on this podcast because there are, you know, murmuration is poetic. Snarge, there's something
opposite
like,
end of the spectrum.
Yeah. It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's like a punch in the face.
If a school of fish does the same thing, is that also a murmuration or do they have their own word for it?
Any bird that flies in that like coordinated flocking pattern where they're tightly packed together, they all kind of move as one, that's going to be a murmuration. So you can have like a murmuration of blackbirds is something we see often in the fall. But yeah, starlings are known for being particularly murmuration-y.
Murmuration-y. I like that. Well, it's good to know that it wasn't Shakespeare's fault that we have invasive species.
Speaking of words, also what happened this week on the morning show, we heard from someone, another word that kind of got John and I in a quandary and a little, you know, at different ends of the spectrum, because I didn't think he was using it right and he didn't think I was using it right. And then we had our good friend Richard call in.
Good morning. This is sustaining member Richard Boyne calling. I have a science word that's one of my many favorites. It's meniscus. And I don't want to extend my discussion any further than that, but leave it up to people to discover. So it leaves a lot of room for wiggle, and I like that.
Oh.
Have a good day. Goodbye.
Oh, it leaves a lot of room for wiggle.
Wow, that was a really good description.
Leaves a lot of room for wiggle.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I got to tell you what happened. So first of all, I was thinking of this because I was told by a physical therapist I might have done something to my meniscus. So I didn't really understand this. And then John started describing it. And we heard from, I think, 5 people. And that's incredible to tell us about that. It means both things. But 2 doctors wrote in right away and said meniscus, 2 meanings. In anatomy, the C-shaped cartilage in the knee. In physics, the curve in a column of liquid that John described. That was Dr. Bill. And then we heard from Dr. Craig, who had said to us, oh, both uses of meniscus are correct. It can be the uplifted rim of water that sticks to the glass or the wedge of cartilage that sits between one's thigh and lower leg bone.
There you go. And the shape is the same in both of them,
mm-hmm.
or the root word or
there
source.
You go.
Now, who can spell it?
I think I can. M-E-N-I-S-C-U-S.
Nailed it.
Is that right?
I was spelling it muniscus, M-U-N.
Oh.
And looked it up just before we talked today. I was like, oh, nope.
I thought meniscus. It was like min. Like mini meniscus.
Mm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Huh, interesting. We're always learning something.
Very lesbian
we
of
are.
Me to ignore the men. Sorry, what were you saying?
We want to give Malachi, our co-host this week, the treat of listening to one of the kids' reports.
Let's do it.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, Malachi. What do you do at KAXE before we go?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Also, good job. So I am a producer. I do our Minnesota music show called Minnesota Mixtape. So that's my kind of main area of focus. And then I also just assist with general music stuff for Kari Hedlund, assisting our music director. So I do a lot of music reviewing, thinking about what music we should play, making music available to our volunteers and everyone at the station. So a lot of music stuff, some live music, calendar stuff as well, focus. And then I try and distract people from working if they come to the office.
We get to sit next to each other. So, you know,
I think of myself as like the link. You know, I sit between
that's right.
the music team and the morning show team.
Yeah. Although I should be at my desk more. I'm not there that often. So I always say we sit by each other, but I'm not always there very
much. Yeah, you've been running away from me lately.
I know. No, Malachi's just a treat to sit by. And and he also fills in when needed. So I get to drag him into the morning show. We drag him into the Season Watch pod. I mean, it's a lot of fun. So
mm-hmm. I'm really happy to be here on the 10th episode.
We love a good sport. So let's take a listen to some kids who knows, maybe someday are also going to be hosts of the Season Watch pod.
This is Cora and Olivia reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phonology report for the week of December 14th.
A classmate was moving some items from a wood pile and found a large mouse nest built out of insulation.
Mr. Caddis had a bat in his house this week. He was able to get it outside, but it is now curious where it came from.
We had a couple barred owl sightings and also have heard them calling at night.
We spotted a group of 7 deer together in a field. Could they be yarding up already?
There's a large flock of cedar waxwings feeding on the fruit trees outside our classroom window.
There are small cone-like objects growing on willow trees that are actually willow cone galls. Each one has a small larva inside along with numerous hibernating insects and spiders.
There are also strange objects on tree branches that look like animal droppings on a stick. It's actually a gall called black knot fungus.
One of our classmates was lucky enough to find a pseudo scorpion in their house. Even though they look intimidating, they are harmless and eat other pests.
A classmate chased a vole running across snow before it disappeared into a tunnel near a tree trunk.
Cottontail rabbits are very common sight around sundown. And we also had a rare sighting of a jackrabbit.
We had a sighting of a muskrat on an ice of the lake. It appeared like it couldn't find its hole back into the water.
That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Wow. I learned a lot. So galls. I don't know if we're getting into galls, but that kind of rocked my world this week. There's a little
teaser for next week's
podcast. Oh, okay. We'll save that.
Christmas special. Mm-hmm. People will get to hear Sam Gaida again.
Yeah. That one rocked my world. They said when the deer are getting ready to yard up again. What's that? What does that mean?
Yeah. So in deep snow, the deer don't want to spend all their effort meandering through deep snow, so they'll kind of gather in these yards.
Okay.
Often in like cedar swamps.
Yep.
Generally not like people's yards, but they like gather together in cedar swamps and they call it yarding up.
Oh, I was thinking people's yards.
It seems like a weird word. Why don't they call it like swamping up?
Or the measurement swamp of a yard. You know, it could have been that.
Yeah, like they all stay 1 yard away from each other.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah. So many things in there.
I'll speak to whoever's manager I need to speak to about getting it renamed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Paperwork on that one. What was it? The false scorpion?
Pseudo scorpion.
I don't think I've ever seen anything that looks remotely like a scorpion in my home up here, which I'm assuming a pseudo scorpion would look very similar to a scorpion. I'd be a little terrified.
Right now.
I love this.
I kind of wonder whether it's the... Oh, yeah, it does look like a tiny scorpion. Okay. With like... Okay, so think about like what a tick looks like. But then put big old scorpion pincers on it. And like,
wow.
Way bigger than you would think.
Terrifying.
Scorpion pincers on it.
They'll pinch you. Does look terrifying. Suck your blood, but... too. Wow.
Won't do either of those things, but will kill off. Oh, yeah. They prey on, you know, the moths that chew holes in your clothes? They prey on those. They prey on carpet beetle larvae, book lice, ants, mites, and small flies.
So you want them in your home. It's like a good sign.
You want them in your home. Yep.
Go release
a bunch of pseudo scorpions into your home.
And then
that's what we're telling you on this week's podcast.
Yeah, you could have pseudo scorpions along with the starlings that are now your pets in your home.
Yes. You know? Mm-hmm. If you haven't chosen to kill them, which John made it clear that you can also do that. I think this is the right time to share this story. I think my dad is a birder and he does kill birds. Invasives.
Oh.
I'm sharing some news about him.
Mm-hmm.
They have a porch, and they have also, he's been trying to bring, like, martens back, purple martin, what are they, is that right, purple
mm-hmm.
martins? Yeah,
purple
okay.
martins, yep.
Yep, and invasive birds take over a lot of times. He will go out there, and he will destroy their nests and their things. So, I think he's a real birder, because he's killing them, but, you know, he's these invasive birds, he takes that to heart. He probably didn't actually know that it was legal. He probably just was doing it, because he lives out in the middle of nowhere. But it's good to know that he's in the clear.
I had this conundrum before. I had a bunch of starlings nest. We had a balcony, and they were nesting in the roof above ours. And I had the conundrum of, like, I know they're invasives. I know they're, like, terrible for these other birds. But they're so cute. And they're little babies. I let them live. But I did feel weird about it.
Is there a sparrow that's also invasive around here?
House sparrows. So house sparrow. House sparrow.
So is that the same situation? I feel like I have also heard that I never fact checked this, but I would hear that somebody in New York was like, I want Central Park to be like my home in Europe. And then he just let a bunch of house sparrows out. Is that
wouldn't put it past him.
So
maybe, I have not fact checked that particular tale yet. But.
Okay.
Maybe Shakespeare is involved in that one too. Who knows?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. Now this is the time of Season Watch Pod where I make Charlie jealous. You mentioned purple martin, but we heard this week from Noah from Brit. He said, thought I'd share this video of one of our furry friends enjoying the cold, Mr. Martin. He is on the trail of snowshoe hares, and by the number of tracks, he's got good odds. There are a lot of hare this year. Also a good number of lynx out looking for a meal. And then we talked about it on the air, and of course, John wants to go see Noah in Brit. And this next part, I think, includes all of us. He says, in all seriousness, I want to offer John or any of the other KAXE family the opportunity to come explore our area for phenology or general wilderness exploring. We're surrounded by national forest here, and I have a few trails on our property as well to explore. Sincerely, Noah and family.
Wow.
That is so generous, and there is no better lure for me than a pine marten.
Yes. Oh, I think we should take him up on that.
I hope they're ready for a new roommate.
Yeah, but not even in a small group, just everyone. We take a day off work.
And we take the photographer, Lori.
Yes.
Yes.
That's going to be our next.
This is my dream staff retreat.
Yeah, I was going to say retreat or bonding exercise for the staff. Of
yes,
KXE.
Hopefully it's cold. The last time that I went and looked for owls, didn't see any, but I saw a pine marten. It blew me away. They're like the cutest.
Oh, see? She's never seen one.
Sorry, it was like
in the
cutest.
Wild. Well, look at her. She's gone. She's out of here.
She
won't hear this part because it was like the cutest thing that I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I've seen one once. Charlie, we've got
to. Y'all.
Did you ask Santa? Did you ask Santa for a pine marten this year? You need to do that.
That's absolutely what I should do. Oh, they're so cute and fuzzy in their little pig tongues, and I beat it. Malachi. Oh, okay.
Oh, this is my one and only time. So
I'm fine. I'm so chill. That's completely fine. I have no feelings about it.
As we go, we're going to listen to another of the birds that you saw, right, on your Christmas bird count, even though you're not a birder, a pine grosbeak. How do you think Malachi did? Should we do some rating besides him making you angry that you knocked over your chair and stood up?
How did I do on the podcast or how did I do on the bird count?
No, podcast.
In general.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Just give me a score of my overall existence as a human being. It's like that Black Mirror episode where you get ranked for doing everything.
We're going to turn it up to 11 from old Malachi. I think that's a good
thing. Hey, respect. R.I.P. Rob Reiner.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There you go. Let's take a listen to the pine grosbeak. Where's this sound coming from, Charlie?
Oh, what an excellent question.
This is sort of like music. You would never not say who wrote the song or who performed the song or that kind of thing. You want to give credit to the artist.
Well, it's from Becca Engdahl.
There we go.
Now I need to look up where it was from.
Oh, okay. We got to find
394-337.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, we get the person who recorded it, the place they recorded it.
Is that iNaturalist, the 394-337 thing?
No, this is Zeno Canto.
Oh.
So this one is from
Spell
Lakeport Township, so in Hubbard County, Minnesota.
Oh.
Recorded on November 26, 2017.
I'm embarrassed to say that I don't know my counties very well in Minnesota.
Oh, wow. Not even Northern?
Which one's Hubbard?
Oh, that's over by Bemidji. Hubbard is like Park Rapids, Bemidji
area. Got it.
Area.
Park Rapids. Yeah, so yeah. South of it. Okay, yeah. There we go. Thanks. Sorry.
Looking at the map, what I was going to say is, it's to the left of the Leech Lake Reservation.
Yeah. It's
west. West is left.
Bemidji area is both Beltrami and Hubbard kind
Got
of
it.
Area in there. So if that helps.
I knew it was, somewhere up here.
Yeah, you were good. Let's take a listen. And thanks a lot, Becca Engdahl, even though somehow maybe Becca's listening to the podcast. Wouldn't that be great?
I hope so.
I would love that.
She should let us know by doing the speak pipe. You can find it in the podcast notes. You can also find it on our website, kaxe.org. That's Charlie Mitchell, Malachi Coons. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in. Did we convince you that you can be a birder now? You can say you're a birder? Have you lost your imposter syndrome?
It's not imposter system. It's a syndrome. I don't know,
What is it?
It's just... Okay, we didn't really get into this whole conversation of what it is, but so the other day, wasn't there like an eider in Bemidji?
Right, I just remembered what an eider is.
It got blown off course.
Not
okay?
that I've heard, but
so,
sure.
What I was saying is I had zero urge to like upend my life and go see this bird that got flown off course. I bird just when I'm out doing, you're just going. I mean, obviously the bird count is a little different. Like you get up and go do this thing to look at birds. But okay, hypothetical. I go home for Christmas and I play pickleball with my dad. I don't play the rest of the year. I am not a pickleballer. Thoughts?
Fair enough.
Okay, I can. That didn't
you
work.
You have a point.
Yeah. I don't have a life or list. I'm not trying to check off birds. I don't care about identifying little brown birds. They're all the same to me. I don't want to know the difference.
He has a really big problem with the LBBs, the little brown birds. He doesn't like them.
That's not what I said. I just don't know the difference between them. And I think they're okay with not knowing the difference between them too. So,
fair enough. Interesting. See, first of all, we need to come up with like a nice, like, if three of these things are true, you are a birder.
Right.
Something like, do you keep track of which birds you see? Can you identify like 10 or more species? Do you go out to bird and like...
At least once a year.
How many pounds is your binocular? Or like...
Ooh.
Lens for your camera. There's something that's got to be along with like the...
Yeah.
Yes. I have a pair. But most people have a pair somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But what quality?
Right.
It's a good question. It was a Christmas gift a while ago, so...
Oh, and then like maybe something about birding by ear.
Yeah.
See, birding by ear.
So you have to have three of those to be a birder. So you're good. You're
based
solid.
On that criteria, I am a birder.
No, you're not.
Right? Sorry.
I don't think. I mean, you have the binoculars. That's the one.
Yeah, if they're, I guess, of up to a par that we have yet to choose.
Oh, but and I guess I don't know. I shouldn't assume this. Can you identify at least 10 birds?
Yes.
Okay. So you got two.
But
choose to go out birding.
10 birds here? I mean, anybody can identify 10 birds. Ostrich, flamingo, blue jay, cardinal, okay. Right? Like that's, I can get to 10.
10 Minnesota
everyone.
Birds.
In Minnesota.
Minnesota birds.
Yeah.
Cardinal, blue jay, turkey, pheasant, rock pigeon. They know the correct name.
Robin.
Why did I skip Robin? I think we can get to 10.
And the
chickadee.
Loon, for sure. Doesn't matter. People know
the
loon.
The
chickadee.
Waxwing.
Ooh.
No.
I feel like I've told some people about waxwings and they've been... I remember when I found out waxwings existed, it kind of blew my mind. I was like, these are the little superhero birds. They're my favorite bird. They got the little like bands around their eyes. Their tails are so brightly dipped in colors.
You could ask... That could be on a list too. You have a favorite bird.
Okay. Now you're just trapping me when I say something, then it becomes a qualifier to be a birder.
No, I think we put the number up. It's not three or down, right?
Yeah.
No, what am I?
Maybe we have like a total of 10 qualifiers, and it's like if you're four of these or something like that.
Yeah.
What we need to do is throw this out to the self-identified birders.
Yeah.
Who... I'm sure we have at least a few listening to this podcast.
Yes, we do.
And you know what? Send us a voice memo.
There we go.
Tell us what the criteria should be
and
for
you. We'll get the math going and the spreadsheets and all of that stuff, and we'll see if we can figure out this equation of who is a birder, who's not a birder. I mean, you get to self-identify. We shouldn't give you the business there, Malachi, because we know you're not a pickleballer and you're not a birder.
Don't get me wrong. I love playing pickleball with my dad. It's super fun. Great bonding.
We will not guilt you or bully you into being either of those words. Okay? We respect you.
Thank you. I actually needed that today.
Yeah. Well, thanks, you guys. That's a little bit of extra for our podcast listeners. So should be fun.
A little bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
This has been a delight.
Yeah.